Hi, Faraze, and welcome to the About Her show. This show is about women achievers, who we call women trailblazers. And it is about conversations where they share the story of their lives with us, tell us about their journey, ups and downs, challenges, and how they navigated their lives around those challenges. And the idea is to inspire and motivate the listeners, you know, to get out of whatever is holding them back and follow their dreams, their desires, their ambitions. And eventually, we want to build a community of women who are there to help, support, and encourage, motivate each other. So welcome. And without further ado, let's dive in. Yeah.
Yeah. So hi, Sangeeta. And it's a pleasure being here with you on this About Her fabulous show that you have, and I would be happy to, you know, help women, empower them, and like you said, give them a space where, you know, like they get some form of holding,
yes,
and some strength and courage too.
Yes, right. So tell us a little bit about your childhood and early life, and how those experiences, they kind of influenced the path that you took in life.
Okay, so I grew up in, I was the first born in both my paternal and maternal side of the family. And my father was in the army, in the armed forces. But I was raised by my grandparents. So I grew up surrounded by a lot of love, a lot of affection, a lot of warmth. My grandparents' home was it was like an open house, I would say. Everyone was welcome. And so we belong to this in Punjab, in Pakistan, which is called Miawali. And we belong to the Pathan tribe. And there is a lot of oppression there till date. So my grandmother, at least, was very, you know, she was very progressive. And I was raised by women who actually were very, I would say they were very empowered in their own beautiful way, very dignified. And my grandmother actually got her schooling, her early education in Ambala, India. And my great-grandfather, he migrated from India to Pakistan. So, you know, my grandmother also had a sister, and she also used to live with my grandparents. She, again, was a amazing role model for me while I grew up. So I had quite a fairy tale kind of a childhood. And because my dad was in the armed forces, so mostly I spent most of my years with my grandparents, because he used to move from, you know, city to city, and there weren't that many good schools there then. But I did, you know, get a taste of that life also, moving homes, connecting with people. So I would say that, yeah, I had a very kind of, there was a lot of learning also there. When we used to move different cities, you know, just meeting other people, a lot of, like, I learned to adapt to new situations, new schools, new environments. So, yeah, I think I had quite an amazing childhood.
Okay. So do you think that paved the way for the kind of life that you are leading now, or, you know, whatever you're doing now? Did that influence you?
I always loved connecting with people. Even as a child, I had a lot of friends. I was very curious as a child, very creative. I loved reading books. I remember coming back from school, and the first thing I would do is grab a book and just kind of huddle in a corner and read till my mother would find me. She really encouraged me. My mother loved to paint. She was very passionate about art. She still is. And, you know, she really encouraged me to read and kind of believe in myself. And one phrase that she always used to kind of say was that a dream is, a vision is merely a dream until you take action.
Yes.
So, yeah. And another line that I grew up hearing, not only from my mom, but also from my grandmother, was, be your own superhero. Like, you know, nobody's going to come rescue you. So
yeah,
really believe in yourself, and just sit and kind of wallow in your self pity and misery. You know, just kind of get up and do it. Don't just whine and grumble. So these were the kind of messages or maybe the stories that I grew up, listened to while I was growing up. And there was a very fearful child, a little girl in me too. But then there was a part of me which was very like curious and, you know, just fearless also.
Okay.
So yeah, I was very passionate about reading. I loved Enid Blyton and I also used to doodle a lot. So I would often go into this fantasy world as a child and just, you know, create stories in my head. So I loved listening to stories. I loved telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved watching movies. One of my favorite movies was Sound of Music.
Okay.
And I remember I recorded the whole movie on Usamane mein, you know, there used to be cassette. Cassettes. So I
Yes.
remember I recorded the whole movie on that.
Okay. So interesting. And I think, yeah, when you have a powerful and role model women around you, they do actually in some way or the other, they influence you. I mean, you may not realize it at that point, but
yeah.
I think you imbibe that strength from them in a big way. Okay.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
So as a child, like we all have these dreams of wanting to become something when we grow up, you know, these aspirations. So did you have any of those?
I did. I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write a book.
Oh,
and
great.
Like I said, I would doodle and I would write stories. You know, generally, I started writing a diary, I think, when I was probably 6 or 7.
Oh, wow.
And I had this small diary and there was a lock to it. One of my aunts got it from the States. And, you know, here I would also like to kind of bring in that I had 4 aunts. So my mother, there were 5 sisters and I had an uncle also. So all 4 of my aunts also like role models for me. So one of diary for me and I would write, then I would lock it, then I would hide it. So I started writing in my diary, yeah, at a very early age. And like I said, I loved reading, writing, and I loved, you know, doodling and just kind of, I wasn't very like into art, painting and all, but these were definitely some of the things which, and yes, I love reading. So my mother put me in a reading school when I was 7. And I love horses. I always used to, you know, that feeling of sitting on a horse and that freedom of just kind of feeling
The wind in your
wind blowing
hair
your
and
face and all that. So, it's a very liberating kind of a feeling.
I can imagine. So just tell us about the kind of work that you do now. I mean, the counseling and all of that that you do. How did you get into it? And what exactly is it about?
Okay, so I got married at a very young age. I was married into my mother's family, and I had 5 beautiful children from him. But there was a lot going on in that marriage, which I was not okay with. And I decided to take a very brave step because here in our society in Pakistan, there is still a lot of shame when it comes to divorce. And leaving marriages. So I divorced my ex-husband. And after that, I found this wonderful man who I remarried. And again, there was a lot of shame associated with that also. So I was carrying a lot of my past trauma. And then the marriage, although there was nothing, you know, obviously he had his trauma and I had my trauma, but generally, the shame around it, it kind of really started burdening me. And that's when I decided to go into counseling, therapy, my own personal therapy. I had no idea what therapy was. I had heard that, you know, it's just something to do with mental health. But I had no clarity. I was pretty confused. So I found this really wonderful therapist who held my pain, guided me, and really gave me a lot of support. So. And I saw how it helped me break a lot of patterns. Because what happens is that when you yourself have been through trauma, you're not aware of it, and you don't get the right space or that safety to kind of process it, you start projecting it onto others, and mostly it's your loved ones. And you know that, of course, you start inflicting your own pain onto others, so it becomes like a this cycle that you get stuck in, like kind of like self-sabotage, right? So so as I kept processing my own stuff, broke a lot of patterns, got to know myself, got to understand myself, I literally, Sangeeta, broke a lot of barriers. And I sometimes, when I reflect on my own story, I'm like, wow, was that me? You know, like, I don't even know. Sometimes I myself am kind of amazed. So down the road, maybe a year or so, you know, my therapist just suggested, she said, why don't you, you know, why don't you take this up as a professional? Because I was totally in awe of her, my therapist, right? And I said, really, you think I can do it? And she said, yeah, you have just the right ingredients. You're a very good listener. And she kind of then, you know, kind of identified a few of my strengths, which are needed, or which are kind of, I would say, essential for a good counselor or a good therapist. So I started my journey about 5 years back, and I did a certification, which is basically in humanistic counseling, which is more of your own self-awareness and understanding of your own self.
Okay.
And then after that, I did my diploma in psychodynamic psychoanalysis and humanistic, already I had done. So I did that. That was about 2 years. Then I did a couple of, I did an internal family systems program. So I'm a certified IFS trainer. Then I did a few other online courses again, you know, on counseling. And I started practicing about 2 years back, and I really enjoy my work. I think it's one of the most fulfilling professions. It is so beautiful how, you know, the connection, how you connect to another human being and how you connect to that human being's pain. But at the same time, I also still am in personal therapy, because unless you really go deep into your own process, you won't be able to help the client sitting in front of you, because you really need to connect to your own pain and have a lot of compassion for yourself. And then I have weekly supervision sessions. So it's like, it's an ongoing process, I would say.
Okay. So basically you're counseling and helping people deal with their issues, challenges, traumas, or, you know, whatever they would have faced in life. So yes, it is quite a challenge, I'm sure, to do this. And you know, need to not only connect, but empathize and sympathize with the other person. Yeah. And of course, you've got to have those emotions and those feelings in place yourself, because before you can do others. So tell me, when you started thinking of getting into this as a profession, so were there any challenges, any hurdles that you faced? And were those hurdles because of your gender or because of the space that you wanted to get into?
No, I didn't face any challenges as far as my gender was concerned. I think people here are pretty open to counseling now. When I started, maybe the awareness wasn't that much, but I have felt it in the last 2 years. There's been a huge shift.
Okay.
And people are getting out of this. You know, there is a shame. There is shame associated with therapy or mental health. So I'm feeling that kind of that shame is slowly diffusing.
Okay.
Because I have a lot of clients. And you know what? The very interesting thing that I experienced when I started practice was that women were very open to coming and reaching out for therapy. But men were, there was a lot of shame when it came to men.
Okay.
So, and then the few male clients that I do have today, I mean, they are so, you know, once that kind of that shame barrier breaks, they become so vulnerable and so kind of, I feel that with women, maybe it's not as empowering for me as it is to work with men. I mean, I feel the connection is maybe more beautiful when it comes to male clients.
But do you
once
think
they open up, once they become vulnerable? Yeah.
But do you think they don't open up initially because of this false sense of bravado which men have, or
of course, of course. There's a lot of, like, you know, the ego and shame and, oh my God, you're a man. How can you cry and how can you express your feelings? So like I said, the more vulnerable they become, the more deeper and the more beautiful the connection is.
Yeah. You're right, because men, I think boys are told that, you know, I mean, there is that stereotype that you cannot show your emotion, you cannot cry when you get hurt. So obviously, when they become men, this gets even more, I guess, hardened in that sense. So tell me, any young girl who wants to get into the space of therapy or mental health counseling, any tips that you would like to share with them, and how is it, how easy or difficult it is to get into this? And I mean, like I said, any tips that you would like to share?
So as far as I'm concerned, and of course I can speak from my own personal experience, you know, when I started, when I took up this profession, there was a lot that I had to give up on, because what happens is that you get to know yourself, you get to know, you get to value yourself, and what are you worth, you know, what is your self-worth, right? And then, of course, like I said, breaking a lot of barriers, letting go of a lot of limiting beliefs, a lot of stories that you have been carrying, or a lot of stories that were told to you by society, by culture, by whatever, you know. So it's a lot of letting go, right? And that letting go is not easy. It is not for the faint-hearted. So courage, of course, I would say, self-energy, really kind of focusing on your self-energy, curiosity, your creativity, compassion, clarity. What is your intention? Why do you want to take up this profession? So working a lot first on yourself, understanding yourself.
Yeah.
Firstly, going to personal therapy yourself, get to know yourself. Like I said, it's a lot of deep work and it takes time. It takes a lot of energy, it takes a lot of courage, right? But all these other, you know, C's that I spoke about, they're also very important. So it is also a profession where you will have to let go of a lot of relationships, maybe a lot of things, you know, a lot of, like I said, a lot of limiting beliefs.
Okay.
And you know, Sangeeta, that in our culture, whether it's India or Pakistan, there's a lot that we are carrying. We are a shame-based culture. We are a shame-based culture. So really breaking out of that cycle of shame.
And believing that it is okay to get into therapy.
Yeah.
It is okay to, you know, get help or to give help. Yes, I know. I know. Yes. All right. So tell me, I mean, as humans, we have our share of, you know, highs and lows and ups and downs, you know, different kinds of situations, happenings in our life. So how do you keep yourself motivated and on track doing what you should be doing?
So I have a very structured routine. One thing that I'm very passionate about is taking care of my physical strength. And I have been taking care of my body, like exercising, since the past 25 years. I'm very consistent. So consistency is like a core value for me. So I don't think there's a single day that I have, you know, even when I was expecting my children, in my pregnancies, I've been working out. Apart from that, I journal regularly. I wake up in the morning and there is at least about 20 to 30 minutes that I kind of, you know, that time is my time. And in that time, I usually either sit and just meditate, or do a bit of breathing, or just journal, or just have a cup of coffee and just disconnect from my from everything around me. And that is actually a time when, you know, that is the time that I have for myself during the day. And then, of course, I go to exercise. Apart from that, I have some really wonderful friends, not many, but two or three who I seek, you know, support, and I get a lot of love and a lot of compassion from them. Other stuff too, like I get regular massages done. I have my own therapy, which is once a week. So, you know, really taking out time for myself, and really focusing on my feelings, acknowledging them, not shutting them down. So investing a lot of time. And yeah, so I would say, like, be selfish. And then again, with this selfish word, there's so much shame.
But I think you can only care for others once you are well cared for. And I don't think there's anyone well equipped to care for us than our own selves. I mean, we don't need to depend on others. Like they say, self-love. So yes, I think when you are happy from within, then you can spread that happiness. You know, if you yourself are carrying some trauma or some pain or some grief within you, then you can't spread happiness, you know, amongst others. So I think, yeah, that's a very good way to stay on track, because you are following a routine, you are consistent, you are happy with the way you are. So obviously then, you know, that is motivation enough to do what you really should be doing. Okay, that's
yeah,
good.
And I think, Sangeeta, one thing that I would like to add here is that, you know, there's this urgency culture, there's this constant running from one to another. That's how we have kind of become, and constantly being on that survival mode.
Yeah.
So what I've learned in life is that we can't keep kind of going back in the past, change it. Worrying about the future, we're not God. We don't know what's going to happen. So literally staying in the moment, in the here and now, and just immersing yourself in the moment. You know, the little things, have a cup of coffee, literally enjoying each and every sip. Yeah. So that is also, which, like we say, mindfulness. So that is also one thing which really kind of, you know, it kind of connects me with myself and gives me a lot of joy.
So yeah, these are important things, but like you said, you know, in that mundane of life, and then, you know, hurrying from one, you know, job to the next, or one, you know, moment to the next, we just don't kind of, you know, savor or value what we have, you know, in that quest for what we want or what we couldn't do, you know, like, when we are kind of, I think, feeling bad about those things, we just lose track of the present. And that, I think, is something that we should, you know, keep in mind. Yeah. All right. So, Farazi, any valuable life lessons that you would like to share with us? I mean, you know, there's, again, like, life learning tips, because I think we learn from each other. And sometimes we may have experienced something, but we may not have learned anything from it. You know, we may be just kind of wallowing in self-pity that why did it happen to me and all of those things. But, and, you know, in that process, we may have missed the learning from it. So anything that you would like to tell us, I mean, any, like I said, any life lessons?
One of the harshest lessons, but I'm glad I learned it, is that, you know, make education a priority for your daughters.
Okay.
Instead of spending money on their weddings, please give them, educate them. Education is one thing, their degree is one thing that no one can take from them.
Yeah, I agree.
So do that. That is one thing I've learned, because I got married at a very, very young age. I did do my bachelor's thanks to my grandmother. She literally, you know, said that no, there's no way she is going to do her bachelor's. I can't thank her enough for that, and my mother. But after that, I wasn't equipped to kind of financially be independent or financially empower myself. So education is one thing. I mean, there's no, you know, please educate your daughters. Getting out of this, again, like I said, shame. The shame around so many things, Sangeeta, that we, you know, there's this, when I say breaking the cycle of shame, So we are carrying burdens, generational burdens of shame, of trauma. So making your daughters aware, educating them, not only just educating them, getting degrees, but educating them through, you know, mental health. Making them aware. What is your own relationship with abuse as a woman? Because abuse is abuse. We can't justify it.
Yes, we cannot.
It breaks my heart to see women who have maybe doctorates, PhDs, coming to me for counseling, and you know they're stuck in abusive marriages, or they're stuck in a relation, in abusive relationships at their workplace, right? It's not just empowerment through education, it's also through a kind of psychoeducating them and making them aware that abuse is not okay, or harassment and all these things, you know. And another thing which I learned was that, you know, like sometimes when we as women relationships where there is, where the male figure is maybe not earning as much as the female, or, you know, whatever, the power dynamic little not according to the stereotypical kind of roles. So what happens is that women become the male figure. And in that, they kind of start suppressing and repressing their feminine part. So what I learned in life was that, no, the feminine part is so beautiful. So, you know, striking a balance between the masculine and the feminine. So these are all lessons, and then many other, like speaking up, speaking your truth. That is so important. So I think these are some of the lessons that I've learned.
So I guess you would say that these, from these lessons, you would say that these are also things that young girls should keep in mind, you know, when they are kind of, you know, setting up in their lives, personal, professional, they should keep these things in mind, you know, the abuse part of it, being independent financially, emotionally. I guess these are the things that they should also keep in mind. And I think, you know, somewhere like you are, of course, the mother of daughters, so you understand this very important to be independent, because, you know, any kind of dependence, I think it is like very demeaning, because you know, you are answerable to people, and that is not very good for your self-esteem. So Farazi, now of course we see around us that a lot of women have become successful doing what they want to do, and they, you know, making a name for themselves and climbing up. So how does the world react to such kind of women? And when I say the world, of course I mean both men and women.
Okay, so so I feel that since I have started, you know, started working. Because I wasn't, right? I have recently taken up this profession. So I feel that my children respect me more. I feel my parents respect me more. I feel the world respects me more. I feel my husband respects me more. So, I mean, I'm not saying they didn't respect me earlier on, but I can feel that there is this shift. And I feel I respect myself more, Sangeeta. I mean, when I mean, why should I kind of us tarah karke? But it's more me. I feel that I myself today respect myself. I value myself. I value my time. I value my energy. So my space. So I think things are really changing, which is good. It's really good to see how, you know, how quickly things are changing for women all around the world. And it's all about empowering yourself financially, emotionally, and respecting yourself.
I think you have a point here. Before we start looking towards people to respect us, we have to respect ourselves. And that can happen only when we are true to ourselves, when we, you know that what we are doing is right, you know, and we are following whatever our conscience or whatever we are doing, we know what is right. And then when we respect, like they say, you know, you train people, you teach people how to treat you. So when you treat yourself well, when you respect yourself, obviously others will also, you know, do the same.
Yes, I totally agree with you. That's all right.
So, you know, there's another thing that I've noticed around me, that a lot of people, you know, when they reach their mid-40s or, you know, late 30s or whatever, they have started switching to different careers, like what I called a midlife rebooting. So, you know, doctor, taking writing or doing something different, which they were not doing earlier. So what do you have to say about that?
So I was, you know, there's this page on social media called The Holistic Psychologist. And she had shared a post that there is so much pressure, I would say, or again, shame, that you have to accomplish certain goals before the age of 30 or at 30. And it was so beautiful, you know, what she had written. This is exactly what she had written, that there is no age. You can do, you can change your profession. You can go do a degree. There is no age for it. So I think boxing individuals into doing a certain profession or being a certain way or accomplishing certain goals. So it's all got to do with age. And I think, I mean, that is also changing. I feel there is a huge change. I mean, I look at myself. I started my journey, I think my actual, my spiritual awakening or rebirth, it actually happened at age 40.
So I think you're right. There is a lot of awareness and a lot of openness in the way people are looking at things. There's more acceptance. And it is okay if people are doing different things at different ages. And now no longer age is any kind of bar. And then I think, you know, with social media, there is so much of awareness. You can see other people doing so many things that you get inspired that, yes, if she can do it or if he can do it at that age, so can I. So, of course, we keep criticizing social media for several reasons. But this is one way, you know, which it is playing a very positive role because, you know, it does give you a lot of inspiration. So, yeah, there is awareness, there is openness, acceptance, and, you know, there's a lot of flexibility. So, yeah, I guess that is helping a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, Firazi, so tell me something. Like most women, all women, if I may say so, you're juggling so many different roles, mother, wife, daughter, daughter-in-law, career woman. So any tips, any secret sauce, any recipe that you have, which you can share with us as to how you juggle these different roles?
Oh, God. I wish I knew the secret recipes. But I don't know. Like it does get pretty tough at times. I'm not going to... I'll be very honest with you because there isn't a day when one person isn't kind of who I kind of don't, I feel that I don't come up to that expectation that they had of me, the earlier version of me. But I feel that my children have been, they're all five of them are so different. I have four girls and then I have a son. But they're just so beautiful and I am learning so much from them each and every day. So with them, it's, I share a very beautiful, bond and, the same goes for my husband. I mean, I feel he's very understanding and supportive. In fact, he was the one who kind of, held me when I was going through so much in life and also kind of directed me towards this path. So his presence in my life is very, very kind of, I really value it. And, and the same goes for my children. So I just try my best to give them as much of my love and support as I can. Yes, it does get a bit exhausting at times, but now I have the tools to kind of, you know, like you said that, unless you take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of those around you? So I am now in a place where I first, you know, there's this one example I always give my clients in therapy is that, you know, when you sit in an airplane, they always tell you wear the oxygen mask first, you wear it and then put it on your other people around you.
Yeah,
correct. Loved ones or other passengers. So that's my mantra.
Okay.
That unless I take good care of myself, that's how I will be able to take care of the people around me, whether it's my husband, whether it's my children, whether it's my parents. You know, like, I think that is one thing that I really focus on now. My own mental health, my own emotional well-being, my physical health. So I don't know, it's not that tough anymore.
I think also as you grow older, you also kind of realize, you know, how you can do it. Because I think when you initially, when all that comes onto you, you're kind of, you get overwhelmed. But I think with time and age,
true.
You develop the patience. And I think the knack of also, you know, prioritizing what is important today has to be done today. But, you know, other things may be
Yes, true.
Postponed, you know, to tomorrow. Yeah, so I guess we all find our ways and means of juggling, because we all, and we accept that we have to juggle. You know, there is no questioning that, why do I have to play so many roles? So I guess, yes, with time and experience. All right.
And I think one thing that I really want to kind of bring in here is boundaries. So
yes.
Boundaries are very important, you know, something which is a little alien in our society, because we are enmeshed kind of a society, especially in, you know, Southeast Asia, you know, we are enmeshed. It's so independence, individuation, boundaries, they're not very welcome. And there's a lot of resistance. So boundaries in your relationships, whether it's with your husband, with your children, with your parents, every relationship with your friends, giving them space and giving yourself that space. I think boundaries are beautiful. They actually make your relationships healthier.
Yeah, that is true. Those boundaries, I think, are very, very essential. I mean, first, we have to know that we have to draw those boundaries. Then we have them, you know, make them known to people, and then make them, you know, respect. Like I said, teach them how to treat you. So if you don't have boundaries, obviously people are going to be invading and kind of being all over you. So you have to have those boundaries. Correct. Correct. I agree. All right. So Faraze, where do you see yourself 10 years from now?
Okay. I see myself in this profession. I am planning to, so, you know, in Lahore, the city I live in, we still do need more counselors, therapists. So I do have this vision of opening up my own kind of a space where, like a healing space where I could maybe, you know, rent out rooms to therapists or yogis, yoga teachers. I have this friend who does this amazing breathing program called Journey to Joy. So maybe her, you know, some place where people can come and do workshops. Or just kind of seminars on mental health. That is a vision I have. I also see myself, you know, I want to take up a training in couple counseling, because I feel that a lot of my clients are seeking couple counselors. We have very few here in Lahore. So, so I see myself growing and evolving as a nest, helping more people, reaching out to more people. So definitely wanting to kind of, you know, work on myself and increase my knowledge, wisdom, and kind of giving it to others also.
Great, great. Fine. So bigger and better, definitely. So more power to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sangeeta.
All right. So finally, I come to the last question, which I ask every woman. So what do you say? Can a woman have it all?
Yes, of course. Of course she can. She just has to believe in herself.
Okay.
Really embrace her self, like all parts of her, masculine, feminine, the bad parts, the good parts. You know, one thing again, the shadow self is the part that we really don't even want to acknowledge. And there's so much, I would say, there are treasures there in the shadow. So really embracing yourself, accepting yourself, you know, again, breaking the cycles of shame and whatever that we've been carrying. We need to let go. We need to let go of all these burdens of guilt and shame and, you know, the stories that, oh, a mother is like, I would say, a sacrificial goat, which she's not. She's a woman. So, you know, really owning your power. And of course, I feel that, of course, there's nothing that can stop you from having all that you want.
all that you want. And I think that's the key word, all that you want. Not what people expect from you, but what you want. I think that is the critical part of it. Okay. So thank you very much. It was indeed a very, very interesting and enlightening, you know, conversation. I'm so glad to be able to, you know, do this with you, because I just feel that women, no matter where they are from, what age group, whatever it may be, we all are very, very connected, because we all have certain things which are common to us. You know, the issues that we all go through are pretty much the same. The life stages may be different, ages may be different, but then it all kind of, we all go through the same set of experiences. And I think this kind of an interaction
absolutely
can really help us learn from each other. And I think who better to teach us than a woman? Yeah. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Sangeeta. It was so wonderful. And thank you so much for having me here. You take care.
You too. You too. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Tune in every Thursday for some more inspiring conversations with women trailblazers. If you like the show, follow us, and you could leave a review to help us get better. You could even get in touch with us on any one of our social media handles. Hi, and welcome to the About Her show. I am Sangeeta Relan, an educationist, a writer, and a lifelong learner. I also run an e-magazine for women. This podcast is about trailblazing women and their journeys. Women who have broken many a barrier, many a stereotype to realize their potential. If they can do it, so can you. When you are surrounded by positivity and a progressive environment, it is impossible not to get influenced by it. You not only get influenced, but you also get encouraged and motivated. Our guest this week, Faraze Niazi, firmly believes in this. Surrounded by powerful and empowered women during her formative years, she was greatly influenced by them. These role models encouraged her to believe in herself, pursue her dreams, and break barriers. This self-belief motivated her to embrace herself, take some bold steps in life, and achieve her goals. Let's talk to Faraze and understand what the journey of her life has been, and how women in the subcontinent are bound by similar life experiences.